Welcome to The Road to Online Retail, the podcast that helps you successfully navigate the ever-changing twists and turns of the online and physical retail roads. I'm your host, Nigel Miller, and on today's journey, we've spotted some potholes and nasty bends up ahead. So the theme of this week's episode is growing your business in a slowdown. To help you with this, we're going to be tapping into the extensive knowledge and experience of my retail whisperer and shopper experience expert co-host, Kevin Moore. Welcome, Kevin. What's been going on in your world since we last spoke? Are you still globetrotting?
Well, not so much globetrotting. I've just been over the Gold Coast hinterland mountains on a Harley with my beautiful wife for a cup of coffee. So the real road to retail theme is here. It was magnificent. I've been traveling so much on aeroplanes, I'd forgotten how good it is to be on two wheels. So we popped over the Gold Coast mountains. Beautiful, crisp winter's day. 65 Fahrenheit, 22 degrees C, just glorious. But before I do that, over your shoulder, is that the ocean? Is that the ocean over your right shoulder?
It is the ocean. And actually over here, I've got all my drone stuff standing by because the whales are leaping about. And yesterday, just missed them. I saw them on my binoculars, but could not find them. But yeah, absolutely beautiful. And the weather down here in New South Wales is stunning as well at the moment.
Wow, beautiful. Sorry, you asked me a question. I got distracted.
Yeah, so I was basically asking you what you've been up to.
Oh, yes, mainly backs and forwards, not so much flying. I'm supposed to be going up to Europe, but I don't know if I'll be going. I'll definitely be up in Asia in the middle of July. So, you and I have talked about Shopify forever. I was actually a guest of Shopify because we're putting it into one of our businesses, the enterprise version. And this was Shopify Plus just for enterprise retailers. So we had some of the biggest retailers in Australia in a gorgeous restaurant in Melbourne, a place called Prahn, with a lovely man called Simon Underwood. And I'd love to get Simon Underwood, who basically leads sales in Shopify in Australia. I'd love to get Simon on our call to give us his perspective of how we've gone from this crazy little Canadian thing that looked after small moms and dads in garages that is now looking after some of the biggest retailers on the planet. But fascinating. I had the pleasure of meeting Simon Gerrans, who some of you will know if you're following the Tour de France. He commentates, so he's also won the Tour de France, Australian, wonderfully humble man, his gorgeous wife, Rana. So yeah, fascinating week, great week, lots going on. And yeah, it's interesting talking to the guys who look after all of the digital assets, all the technology assets for the major retailers, and some big retailers, the fourth and fifth largest retailer in the country were there, chatting with them, their candor with how complicated still we talk about phygital, but to get phygital, it isn't just physical and digital, there's 50, there aren't. There are 14 legacy IT systems on the retail side, and there's 6 to 12 new systems on the online side, and they're all trying to talk to each other to give us this experience that online is the best it can be, but needs to be followed through so that whatever you buy actually gets there. We're being honest with you, Shami. You talk to each other and everybody's like, oh, everything's 99%. Nothing's 99% on the planet. A bit of banking, maybe, but not many things are 99%. And the fact that we do have bumps in all our businesses where orders don't leave the business. But if you provide I guess we settled on this thing. Why do shoppers forgive us when at times, so 6, 7, 8, 9, 10% of things don't ship on time? Some of them don't ship at all. There are payment problems because of a myriad of things. Remember, we're offering 10 or 12, 15 payment options. And the reality is, as long as you're curating the widest range of things that they like, and you do a good job, you do 9 out of 10 every single minute. School, Nigel. Did you get 9 out of 10 at school?
If only.
I did not.
I was lazy for 9. I got about 7.5.
The smartest kids got 9 out of 10. So when our businesses get 9 out of 10, what happens is shoppers say, I do come to you because you create good things. I do come to you because I like the selection. I do come to you because 9 out of 10 times, things are good. So it was just interesting to the candor, the honesty with people. If you turn around and say to your main board, oh, we only do 90%, they go, oh, that's horrendous. And then you ask the board when they get 9 out of 10 in their lives, and they go, well, not often. But it was great conversations. But it's interesting, this head of steam that's coming up, where if you're online, if you're an enterprise business, then people are looking at Shopify Plus because it works.
Excellent. Now, just before we go too far, I just want to let people know that a little later in the episode, I'll be talking more about AI to our digital marketing expert, Miranda Bond. It's a continuation of the interview we had a couple of weeks back. But in this one, we're going to explore the concerns and challenges surrounding artificial intelligence And I learn a new theory that worries me even further, Moloch theory and how it applies to AI. It's a fascinating chat. That's a bit later on. But before that, let's get back on the road to retail and find out why Kevin thinks we're about to hit some speed bumps ahead and what can we do about them. But Kevin, first, I am a little bit confused because in our first episode, you were telling me that the retail world is thriving. The pendulum may have swung now back to the middle. No longer is it purely because of COVID focusing on online retail. No longer is it focusing purely on physical retail. We've hit that perfect balance of the word I can't say, fidgetal, bang in the middle. Everything's rosy. Why are you now concerned?
Oh, retail's fine. Physical and digital retail's fine. This is a broader issue. This is our banks all around the Western world taking money out of the economy. This isn't retail struggling. This is everything struggling. This is hotel rooms. This is restaurants. This is car sales. This is everything. So the central governments have been panicking about our inflation rates, rightfully, but there's a whole depth of things. Why have we got inflation the way it is, which is different to the inflation we've had before, and why are they using the techniques they used before, which is sucking lots of money out of the economy? Anyway, they are. That's what it is. And it is working. In as much as it is sucking money out of the economy, it does seem to be slowing growth. It does seem to be slowing price advances, but it's hurting everybody. So this isn't just retail. I know it says it's all retail, but it's hurting everything. Significant increases in price for lots of things. So people are becoming far more selective in where they spend their money. You know, my life is all around theories and trends and pattern recognition, but I have a belief that this time it's being met with a number of other things that are going on in our minds as shoppers. So yes, we are hitting speed bumps. So what's happening is we suck all this money out and people have to make decisions on what they are going to have and they aren't going to have. Historically, what we do is we all go low and we go down to all the dollar stores and that's where we buy. But what we've seen is the tide that was flowing against that as you went through COVID is actually we're kind of over the dollar stores. We're kind of over consuming and buying cheap things that we throw away. And what we've seen is people are looking for quality with the money they have. They're buying fewer things with the same amount of money, or they're buying slightly fewer things with a little less money. Now, that's against the backdrop of people genuinely now being the majority, and I know there'll be naysayers here, there'll be naysayers who don't believe electric cars have any room on our planet and that we do need to pump diesel forever. I don't believe that to be the case. I don't believe it's one or the other. I believe we have to change the way we are, and because it's the better way of living, if you live in a city and you haven't got diesel buses. But what we've seen is that people are spending their money more wisely. They're more conscious of the environment. They're more conscious of packaging. They're more conscious of single-use plastics. So they're looking to buy quality. So we went through this phase. I remember telling you I was at Oxford Street about 10 years ago, and you could go into a Primark and spend £5 and come out with literally a bag. I mean, a big bag of clothing, and that was just ridiculous. And within a year, all of that clothing was on landfill. And we've seen shocking pictures, images coming out of Africa where we send things back to Africa to help them with clothes that nobody can wear. And I think what's happening is people are saying, no, they don't want that. So two distinct strands are coming out of this. One is the strand that says people are thinking about what they buy. And when you talk about electric cars, people are going to buy an electric car and they won't buy another one for a decade. Even the cars that we've got in circulation now, people are buying a car and they're keeping them for a decade, 10, 12 years. Buying a new car is no longer a sign of wealth. You grew up in the UK and I spent time in the UK. And what was that crazy thing where the letters on the number plate, the registration plate, would change each year?
Yeah, I'm not sure it still applies, but everyone wanted to have that new letter the second it was available. And so everyone got their brand new car and drove around like they were amazing because they can afford a brand new car. And everyone knows it's brand new because there's a new letter on the number plate.
Yeah.
Don't know if it still applies.
But that conspicuous consumption seems to be going away. You will always have a conspicuous consumption. You'll have people who stack, you know, I've got a big boat, I've got a bigger boat. Well, I've just got a bigger boat. It goes on. The whole stacking thing doesn't go away. But for the majority of us, we're actually looking for things to last longer. Our iPhones and Samsungs are lasting longer than they did. We're looking for quality. We're looking to pay a little bit more and not have to change it over. A great phrase, you know, the only day you question quality is the day you pay for it. So if you can buy a quality item, that's what you want to do. I don't want to keep doing these things. Likewise, the food that's going into our bodies, we're far more conscious of what's going on. We're far more conscious about obesity. We're far more conscious about where the food's come from, what it's got to get to us, what it's damaged to get to us. And we're thinking about that. And when I say these things, I'm talking about the middle of the bell curve. Yeah. I'm not talking about the top 10%, the bottom 10%.
Yeah, I was going to say, it does feel a little bit classish, this one.
It's the middle of the shopper. So if you own a business, do you want to sell to 10% or 80%? So 80% is a good place to be.
Yeah, okay.
If your specialty is just you do luxury cars and you're LVMH and you do luxury brands, that's cool. That's your 10% there. But this is a general thing. And even those luxury brands are finding ways to say, oh, we've now got hybrid supercars. It was crazy. I was in a car park with my beautiful wife and a brand new Porsche, I think it was a GT3. I mean, it was a serious piece of gear. And it came out. It sounded like Porsches do with the pipes on it. And I thought, isn't that bizarre? All of a sudden, for a performance car, that sounds old-fashioned. Because for me, a performance car now is silent. There is so much torque, so much, you know, ability to accelerate from an electric car compared to compressing and squeezing lots of gasoline and air into a little tiny space and then setting fire to it. And I thought, that's crazy. And it was just on that moment, that sounds old-fashioned. Now, my Harley is very... It's not one of my Harleys.
Riding a Harley.
Yes, I know, but this goes back to this thing where there's this change. I don't want another one. I'll ride that one till it's gone. So I don't want another one. But this thing about buying things and keeping them long is important. So that's one stream. The other is this whole thing about e-commerce.
Hang on.
What?
You say
what?
You don't want another Harley, but it wasn't that long ago that you were saying you'd love to try the electric Harley.
Oh, yes. I'm not suggesting that I would some kind of monk that's going to not ride motorcycles anymore. I didn't say that. And I'd love to try one. And okay. One day, maybe that gorgeous machine ends up in my garage as a museum piece. And I go and look at it and polish it and it makes me smart in my old age. And I may be riding electric. I don't think I'll not be riding bikes. That won't happen. But the second thing that's happening is this whole thing about re-commerce, which flows into the old motorbikes. Because some of those motorbikes will last, as I see, at some beautiful places on the weekend where anybody who rides bikes turns up. You can see 40, 50, 60-year-old motorbikes and cars and whatever. So this whole thing about re-commerce, where we actually want to pass on things that have still got value. Now, I'm not a big fan. I also paddle. I spend time on the ocean. And I'm not a big fan of single-use plastic at all. Not for saving the planet. I just hate the fact that when I'm on the ocean, it's floating around and I know that things are swallowing it. And I just find another way. It is quite within our ability to use wood and plant fiber to create packaging that will do exactly the same job as plastic is doing now. So there's no need at all for single-use plastics. If you've got plastic that has a long duration, which is good in our lives, how do we reuse it? No matter what that be, whether it be in tools, equipment, it be in things for our home, no matter what it be, how do we bring that whole re-commerce back in place? I was talking to the new CEO of Toys R Us in Australia and New Zealand, the UK, and she has come from that background out of Singapore where re-commerce in one of the businesses is a big part of their business. So I think that's something that people are looking at and saying, how can we be part of it? I was born in a little tiny town in Germany because my father was army and I was born in Germany, a little tiny town called Rinteln. And I was actually born in something called Wildcat Lane, Nigel. Wildcat Lane. That's where I was born. It's 7 p.m. of summer and we're walking around town and outside every store are the boxes going back to the suppliers that they came from. So Germany put in Der Grüne Punkt, the green spot, put in the green spot 30 years ago. They said that if a manufacturer ships some packaging to a retailer, the manufacturer must take that back. We can do that. We just haven't. So many countries just haven't. The governments haven't legislated for it. They haven't changed our behavior. Two things. One is we want more, but we want better quality in any way that we can. And the second is that we're looking for re-commerce. And I think I'll leave that as a final point. Any of us who live in countries where there is now paid recycling, you will see the amount of people who are taking it upon themselves to collect plastic bottles and aluminium cans and to earn income by spreading that labor around society to get that recycling done. And that's everybody from my granddaughter does it, my mates do it. It's everybody does something to try and help because it's a good thing to do. And people are earning income because they want to do that.
So what I'm hearing here, Mr. Moore, is that things are slowing down. So there is trouble ahead for all retailers, potentially, because people aren't going to be spending money going forward. So what do they do about this? Do they just sit and wait for the trouble to come?
No, first of all, it's here already. So you've seen that New Zealand's gone into a recession. You've seen reports from major retailers with this quarter dropping 3%. So actual dollars that come into their building has gone down by 3 now. The cost of doing business hasn't shrunk. Their insurance costs have gone up. Their employee costs have gone up, although it's cooling a bit now. We had the craziness last year of 10s and 20s and 30s, and we're seeing 5s and 10s. And I actually did a review with about 10 Australian businesses involved in, and they're picking 3 to 5 for salary increases, wage rate increases, labour increases, people's costs increases going forward. So we can see that starting to cool. So it's happening right now. I guess the key thing as you go into this is it goes back to fundamental reasons. The fundamentals always come to the fore. If you've got a basis for something, when things get bumpy, go back to your basic principles. What the values, what are the things that you represent? And stay true to those things. So I had an interview with the journalist who said, oh, what about Amazon? What about Amazon? I said, Amazon don't love toys. We love toys. We're Toys R Us. That's what we do. We've got the widest range of toys. We're not about selling a single SKU of toys. This is what happens in the world of Lego. People key in a number. They key in a number. 506234. Wow, what's sexy about that? 503. Boom. They look around on Google and they price compare and they find the place with the cheapest one of those. Then they go there and buy one and leave. Now, nobody makes money from a shopper coming in and buying one of the cheapest items on your list. Nobody. So what you must do is say, where do I want to play? What I want is people coming into my store and buying more than one. They come in, they linger longer, they buy more than one, they tell their friends about it, they come back again. So how do we do that? So first of all, socials are becoming more and more important. Just at a time which all social media is all dying, it's not. The ability for people who shop with you to share their views, all their views, good or bad, go back to the 10% of things that are wrong. Everybody's going to get bad reviews on Trustpilot. It's going to happen. You're going to get bad Google reviews. It's going to happen. Deal with them. Move on. Some people are just different to the rest of us and will never be happy. I had a great one where somebody said, I bought 3 toys for my child and he didn't like them. So can you take them back, please? We can do, but I'm not sure. Isn't that kind of reflect on bad parenting? But don't do that. Just accept that that's there. And then focus on what you're about. So social is important because they're telling people about what you do and they can talk to each other and they're seeing range and depth. Google Ads has become almost like a race to the bottom. If you're promoting a specific item that a robot is going to find to tell everybody that you've got the cheapest item, you'll sell that one, but you won't get engagement. What you need is for people to understand what you're about and to be able to come and buy a number of items. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't lead with price. So if you are in the situation where there's a hot item, it's going to be in and out, everybody wants it, sure, lead with price. But make sure that every other item in your store is a margin that is acceptable to you. There's a price that you need to charge to run your business. Make sure your core margins are strong. If you do what you do best, the shopper will come in looking for that. This is back in retail, remember? If you buy too many, you clear your own problems. I put a 0 at the end, I bought 10 times more than I needed to. I put them at the front of the store, I mark them down and I get better footfall into my store. It's the same in online. Put them out big and bold, do flash sales, bring people in. But when they're in your store, if your search engines are up to spec, they will come in, they'll buy more. So we just upgraded to Klaviyo across some of our sites. Brilliant AI. It's just changed the search on our site. Unbelievable. So you'd be able to go on board and put in an ill-conceived, as we all do. We all expect everything to auto-correct us and understand our garbled. I think you corrected me on, was it Kinto? What was the brand, the Toyota brand, that you had to keep correcting me on last time? So that's what we do in life.
So it was Kinto. You were saying the sports channel, KO.
There you go, KO. So that's what we do. So we do those things. We hear it and we try, but it doesn't work. Really good AI knows that we're doing that. It's already found out that 15 people like me have got it wrong. So it said, oh, what he actually means is this. And they go, here. So I'm looking for hire cars and KO. They go, no, yeah, There's no hire cars on sports channels, Kev. It's Kinto. And so the AI is doing that for you and solving for you. And that's what we found. We put this in. We did flash sales. We expected our margins to drop and achieve sales here. Our sales went to here and our margin went to here. So what was happening is people are coming in to look for that one item. But because our search is so good now, AI augmented search, they're buying more items. So we look at a pick line and we're not seeing one item for the flash sale going out. We're seeing our boxes with 4 items going out. And that's what you need to be doing. So they come to you and make sure you can offer them other things. Now, the other thing in terms of price, don't discount everything you've got. Gift with purchase is fantastic at a time like this. If you can give coupons, it's fantastic at a time like this because you're getting the income today and you're shipping the product with its cost later. So 2 key things. Look to see how you can do promotions. Buy one, get one free. Buy these 2 at a certain price. Buy these 3 at a certain price. Buy over a certain value and get cheaper shipping. Zero shipping's kind of going away. There's got to be a reason for it, but we're seeing people saying, I expect to pay for shipping. And now I'm back in stores. I do remember that it's hard to get a park. And I do remember that often I get to the store and it isn't there. Just isn't there. So the SKU I'm looking for isn't there. So they do accept that. So there is this reality and realization that buying online, there's a cost associated with that. So they're doing it. That's sort of the ramblings, but there's a theme in there about the fact that things are getting tougher. It is harder to earn that dollar. Shoppers are being far more selective on where they're buying and what they're buying, and that we need to shift the way we deal with those shoppers.
What I'd also pick up from what you're saying there is it really is going back to the fundamentals of retail and the things you covered in your original physical retail shopper experience course and the things we cover in the digital online shopper experience course, that you're basically packaging all these things that in traditional retail has worked forever. You're just focusing on them again now because it's going to make a difference.
And it's funny, you asked me a question a few days ago. We were talking about how do you make the call to choose Klaviyo? How do you make the call to choose Shopify Plus? And I think that's something that as business owners, we have to have the resource around us. Sometimes that's just people around us who are like us. They're like-minded people. There's a great quote in Good to Great, one of the leadership books, about where do I find A-class people? A-class in what you do. Doesn't matter what it is. You're sporting, your theatre, your entertainment, your electronics. If you're A-class, where do you find A-class people? In your community. It might be your digital community or your physical community, but you find like-minded people around you. That's where they are. So you need to find people around you that you can talk to that do what you do and say, what are you doing? Or you need to find genuinely authentic resources that say, we've tried all these things and we believe they work. Choice has been doing it forever. But in our business, in our areas, you need to find places. And we are one of them. Miranda trials things. If it works, she does it. If it doesn't, she rejects it. So I think the thing that she does is important. So settling on it and having faith in it is crucial because it does make such a change to your business when you now bring in an AI augmented tool to do a specific job, a specific job.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing it. We've just been advertising the AI course that Miranda's doing, and the AI augmented advertising engine that she's using, boy, is it giving some results.
But anyway, but the thing is, we do this, so we don't just sit here and chat about stuff. We're actually doing it. And you and I have both, we look at each other and go, wow, see what Miranda's done. So Miranda works on our business, she works on a number of businesses, and it's binary. So from before she's in your business to after she's in your business, it's a magnitude of change. And you can see it because you can see the numbers come through. And I just look at it, wow. And she's embracing specific tools to do that. But it is a key thing. How do we do it? Oh, I've got to spend another $600 a month, or I've got to spend $1,000 up front on this. You got to do it because it's, as Miranda says, it's not giving you just equality. It's giving you real competitive advantage as a small business.
Yeah, it gives you insights as well. You've sort of touched on another thing there that's maybe worth exploring, which is partnerships and collaborations between retailers, suppliers, influencers, whatever it may be. Is that something people should be tapping into at this point?
Yeah, I was told by a great guy, he was a nuclear engineer. And they left being a nuclear engineer and he went into business. And he said, all the greatest things we do in life are around collaboration, whether it be within your religion, it being with your family, it being business, it being the military, it being whatever it be, collaboration is one of the key things. And to really do things well, having a collaborative approach to the end game, providing a product to somebody or a series of products to somebody at the best possible price with the best selection for the best experience usually requires collaboration. And how can you do that? How can you bring brands together? How can you be different parts of the process of the ecosystem together? How can you accept that, well, I'm actually not very good at that, so I actually want to give somebody else that does only that the responsibility of doing it, and they tend to do it really well. And again, this is not new news. We go through these phases of doing everything in-house and then letting things go because we're not very good at it. We're seeing it in the motor industry worldwide at the moment where they're accepting people like Ford are playing catch-up on Tesla because they're saying, we don't do that well. Stop kidding yourself. We just don't do it well. Get somebody else to do it. And when they do it, we, the shopper, the driver, the owner of that vehicle, go, hey, this is good. They didn't do it. They had the humility to say, don't do it. I'm going to get somebody that does that.
Okay. So shopper experience, is that secondary now in a downturn, or do you worry about it even more?
I don't know about even more or even less. I think it should just be the basic tenet. Why are you doing it? I mean, why on earth are you in business? If it's just to make a dollar, go and do something else. Go and sell insurance. Go sell the insurance on big aircraft and big ships. You make lots of money from that. Or go and be a stockbroker. If it's just about the money, there's better ways and not easier ways than being a physical retailer and online retailer. Take a stick and jab it in your eye some days. That's what you do when you're in physical retail and online retail. You do it because you're passionate about it. You're passionate about the things that you're involved in. People are passionate about it. So it should never go away. You should always have pride to say, I'm doing the best I can. I truly believe I'm putting the shopper at the center of what I do, and everything is around them. Grumpy, bad, irritable, complaining that they can be on certain days. Happy, amazing, complimentary they can be on other days. But no, it should be the shopper in the middle. You should always be striving to give the best shopper experience across that range of things. The service, the price, the choices you're making. If you're a merchant, choose good things that touch your heart, that's going to touch somebody else's heart. That's why we're in it. That's why we've always been in it. That's why some people start as tailors and they do the whole of their life as a tailor. That's all they want to do. Now they try other things, they go back. That's what they want to do. Some people sell cars their whole life. That's what they want to do. They love them. So no, it should never go away. You got to find ways to engage with them when they got less money, but no, it never goes away.
Now, one thing when we were talking about some of the elements behind this topic, one of the things you mentioned was drop shipping. Why would that be useful in this scenario?
So most people who do one thing well have a limited range of SKUs. They do it really well and people come back to them, especially males. So if you're doing something that's got a male shopper profile and you do it well, males will come back to you when they need that thing again. Males are not very promiscuous shoppers. They like to go to a single person. If they have a good experience, they'll come back. They hardly think about price, but to the amazement of some of their partners at times, and they just buy things that they want. But if you can do that, that's great. But the reality is it's very hard to grow a business until you have more and more and more shoppers, or you're able to at the same time offer existing shoppers more things. Let's go through what dropship is. What dropship says is that I have 10 things in my warehouse. Nigel, you've got 10 in your warehouse and Miranda's got 10 in her warehouse. And we live in different parts of the country and we're complementary. And we find each other and our shoppers are coming, they're coming to you. And what we find is that if we are able to put your SKUs in my store and Miranda's SKUs in my store, I've got 30 SKUs. So I'm offering more to my shoppers. Now, I don't want them in my warehouse. Yeah, I want them in your warehouse. And I'd like them to go from my website to the shopper's home without ever touching it. Because that's a benefit to you. Now, you don't make the normal margins you make because you're not getting the shopper price. You're selling to me at wholesale. Or slightly enhanced wholesale we tend to work on. Slightly enhanced. So we may well do a situation where we both eat a little bit of margin, share the margin, because we're getting that benefit from each other, and you're able to grow. So we did a lot of interviews with some amazing guys and girls in across Europe, America, Asia, and Australia to get these roles in. And almost to a person, they said when they're in their lead roles, when they introduced dropship, the size of their market just went ballistic. So one of them said they're carrying 20,000 SKUs of fresh and dry grocery. And when they dropped in dropship, they increased by 50,000 SKUs. So that's a phenomenal thing for you to do your shopper. So your shopper doesn't have to click around everywhere and they do trust you and it can be shipped to you. So dropship is a big, big part of it. Marketplacer, you'll have heard of. But trying to dropship and allow maybe companies that are slightly smaller than you, if you're slightly ahead of the curve and you've got a bigger database, then it's going to be expensive them to get to that size. But if they can offer your SKUs to that database, then they get exposure for their brand. They get happy shoppers. Some of those shoppers' purchases in the future may come directly to you because they remember the brand name. They don't know where they got it from and they come back to you. So there's benefits for everybody. But dropshipping is a big, big deal. And that's why having it built into the Shopify community is a big deal. By the way, I'm really happy now, Nige. You haven't had it, but Shopify bought me a lovely lunch and 2 glasses of champagne. So I do feel like I've earned something from respecting their product and telling the world that I believe it's a great product. So well, I'll bring you a bottle. I'll bring you a bottle so that you kind of share in the respect.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin. But also our website is on their platform too. So we have actually invested our own money in their platform because we found it was going to work better for us.
Absolutely.
So what else should people, do they now start worrying about their working capital? Do they now start worrying about their margins? Do they drop their margins? Do they drop their prices? What else?
Yeah, no, I think that's the toughest thing. So you have to be true to what you are. So let's go back to fundamentals of retail. If it's there and you've got too many of them because you order too many, wash them out. If you've got 10 months stock and you normally carry a month, wash out 9 months, but do it in a positive way. Think about how you're going to use that liquidation to bring people into your store. Same on a site. If you're overstocked because you've ordered wrong, bring inventories back in line, free up cash, put that cash into normal things, but use that as a benefit. If you're going to eat margin, if you're going to trade on thinner margins, then make sure there's a benefit to you and the benefit to getting more shoppers into your business. If you've got SKUs there that are just, they just didn't hunt, you know, the saying down in Alabama, that dog don't hunt. If it didn't hunt, then get rid of it and don't put it back in again. Don't stock it again. Don't look at your sales figures and go, oh, look at that blue thing. I sold 10 times more last month than I've done for ages. That's because you sold it at half your cost price. Forget about half your retail price. Block it off, remove it, don't do it again. But in the core of your business, you must be true to where you are. If you're buying SKUs and selling them, you've got to make a margin that is reflective of your cost base and being able to feed your family. That's why we do it. So use the phrase, I'm a capitalist with a socialist heart. I'm a capitalist first. You've got to make money. You can't be a socialist and distribute money unless you've made money. So you must be true to your business. You must make money.
So, which is a pretty good moment for us to bring in Miranda's earlier interview about AI, because one of the things we've been talking about in the previous episodes is how AI can help us be more productive. But as we are all probably aware, there is potentially reasons to be concerned. So let's have a look at this little interview. So Miranda, let's deep dive into AI. Let's start with an easy question. Are we all goners?
That's a great place to start, isn't it, Nigel? Look, I think there's definite safety concerns around AI. And I mean, even the very creators of the models that we've got at the moment are worried. You've had Elon Musk and a whole load of other kind of engineers and AI tech gurus come out and sign a petition saying, let's pause everything for the next 6 months. I think anyone right now who really understands AI or who is working in AI and who isn't a little bit afraid, then I would be quite concerned about.
It's a gold rush.
It is a gold rush.
And the trouble with gold rushes is there's not much regulation at the rushing stage.
Absolutely.
That comes in, the big companies come in and put structure to things, the wildest elements get potated.
Yes.
But we're now at the wildest element stage, aren't we?
We are totally there. And you remember the browser wars?
Alta Vista compared to
correct.
First in, best dressed may not be it.
You had Netscape versus Internet Explorer,
AOL.
And you had Microsoft come out and kill it and get into lots of trouble. We are now at the AI wars, and you've got four distinct camps with four big kind of models. And bear in mind, these models, they take a huge amount of investment and computing power and everything to get to the point that they are now. This is where we get into kind of real Moloch territory. And for people who don't know
what I'm... Are we going Viking gods here? What's this one?
Well, actually, Moloch was a god. Well, supposedly, it was based on the Allen Ginsberg poem. And Moloch was the kind of god of game theory, which is...
I think he goes back even further. I think he was god.
No, he was a pagan, I think,
Yeah.
And I think this is a real example of that in AI. Because to give you an example of a Moloch situation, you could give the example of the arms race, right? Yeah. Where people in individual countries don't want war, don't want their countries to be investing gazillions of billions of dollars in arms, right? But the countries all feel that they have to bring out that new weapon or they have to spend this much, because if they don't, they're going to get taken over. And unfortunately, our incentives are all kind of messed up. And when we have this kind of commercial imperative and these competitive environments like we're seeing in the AI wars, unfortunately, safety is one of the things that could very easily get left behind in that search for the next win.
I mean, I think there are so many issues, aren't there? Because the other thing is, we've mentioned, I think, in previous parts of this about all the video models and things like that. So the fact that you got deepfakes and goodness knows what else. So yes, it's a great shopper assistant.
Yeah.
But then that shopper assistant is a famous person because they've mapped them, they've voice mapped them, and now it's you've got copyright issues. Actually, copyright's a big one. Let's touch on copyright.
So the thing with copyright is obviously there's some law cases, there's some copyright cases going on in the States as we speak. where certain people are, well, there's one, there's a class action out there from, by particular artists. There's, I think it's, is it Getty Images or Shutterstock, I think, is bringing an action saying, we didn't give you permission for your AI models to be trained on our copyright images. Now, I personally don't think they're going to win. And the reason why I say that is because these images and these artworks have been out in the public domain. Now, I could go to any art gallery and look at how a painting has been done and mimic those brush strokes or that painting or whatever. But because I've done it myself, then I would own the copyright on it. Now, the US copyright ruling that's kind of recently come out, it's come out in the last few weeks, it says that if the AI has completely created that image, then that is in the public domain. You cannot copyright that, even though you've written in the prompt that tells the AI what kind of image to create, in what manner, in what lighting, in what resolution, whatever. If it's been done solely by the AI, then you cannot copyright that image. Now, if I take that AI generated image and I make that my own. So in other words, if I'm taking that image and I'm building upon it and I'm adding elements and I might be moving things around and turning it into something different, then I can copyright that image.
Let's take it back to small business. And what am I going to hear? What do I need to be aware of? Where do I listen? Where do I keep up? Where do, because it's so much going on, so many
really
changes.
There really is. It's just such a huge, huge thing. I think probably a good place for us to kind of help people is to A, explain some terminology, and B, put AI in a bit of a roadmap. Because if you look at where we are right now with AI, we are literally still at the beginning. We ain't seen nothing yet. We are right now in phase one, which is what we call narrow AI. So the AI that we have at the moment is focused on quite specific tasks, and it has parameters built around it that give it a certain level of safety. Yeah. The next level of AI that we're going into, and this is a term for people to look out for, is general AI, so artificial general intelligence. Now, some people will say to you that we're there already. Some people might try and say that ChatGPT-4, for example, is AGI. It's not. And there's some debate around how you would actually define AGI. So in general intelligence, what we're talking about there is that the AI has the ability to improve upon itself. And this is where we're going into really dangerous territory, because if you are going into AGI and you have not got proper alignment to the needs of human beings, that's when we could literally have lost the plot already.
That's when AI turns on us without us
potentially,
knowing.
Potentially. And then you've got a superintelligence, which comes after that. Now, people will say that when we're getting into AGI territory, that's when potentially we could see AGI beat the Turing test. You're familiar with the Turing test? Yep. This is when you can't distinguish between an AI and a human being because the answers that are given, you think you're talking to a human being. Yep. So that's potentially that next stage. When we're talking about super intelligence, this is where potentially they could be perceived as sentient. This is when we move towards the singularity.
This is where I might go to my Stephen Hawking joke.
Absolutely, go to your Stephen Hawking joke.
Which I read a few years ago. I think I read it in one of the Harari books. Actually, I saw the video of it the other day where he gets interviewed on a comedy show, and his joke about the super computer, it's about to be turned on, they know it's going to be more intelligent humans, the scientists are gathered around and they're going, what should we ask it for a first question? And one goes, I've got an idea. They turn it on and he goes, is there a God? And he goes, bzz, bzz, bzz. There is now. And then a bolt of lightning comes down and hits the plug so they can't turn it off.
And that is literally what people are afraid of, because if we get to a point of going into AGI and we have not got alignment or suitable safety, it's too late. We've let the genie out of the bottle and you cannot put the genie back in, and you will probably not be able to turn it off.
And I guess the other problem here is that we've got brains like a Stephen Hawking and the super brains that are able to think far deeper than you and I. Yeah. Who are worried about this stuff.
Absolutely.
And then we're sort of expecting someone somewhere or some organisation somewhere to come along and go, well, we can regulate that and we can get our heads around what the potential problems are and we can foresee that we shouldn't do this and we shouldn't do that and expect everyone to abide by it. I mean, like, it is genuinely quite scary.
Absolutely. And we're back into Moloch territory, where if one company was to not progress down that level and say, OK, let's put on a pause, then you're letting the other company get a step ahead of you. And they've got all these different commercial imperatives and we're in a really bad situation. I tell you, I sometimes feel, because you hear about the guys like Sam Altman, who's CEO of OpenAI, Elon at Tesla, talking about their concerns and their genuine fears about it. What they're like to me is a band of brothers playing out in the park. They're playing with, I don't know, sticks or swords
sort
or
of
something.
Like, I'm concerned because actually I think he's a bit ahead of me, so I need to whack him down a bit so I can catch up and get ahead.
Correct.
But actually we're all on that same roller coaster of trying to improve.
Absolutely.
And claiming we're doing it in humanity's best interest.
And what they really want is for mum and dad to come in and take the toys away and say, no, you shouldn't be playing with those boys.
But
in the meantime, they can't keep egging each other on. And that's literally where we are.
So from a fatalistic point of view, do we just say, hey, enjoy the ride for as long as it lasts?
My personal opinion is that we've got to put safety first and we've got to do it now. Sam Altman from OpenAI, they have a very iterative approach. So their theory is, well, we'll just keep bringing out a new version and we'll come across the kind of issues as we go. And I'm concerned about that approach because I think that we're going to get to a point where we've got to AGI and we haven't got alignment and then we're in a big problem. Have you heard about the paperclip maximizer theory? Have you heard about this? It's actually a thought experiment,
right,
rather than a theory, where they were saying, if you've got this terribly capable artificial intelligence and their role, their job, their goal is to produce paperclips. So they start producing paperclips for you and they're so good at it, they just keep going. But if you haven't built in the right parameters, they can start to create paperclips out of your food sources. They might start at the easy stuff
that
will turn the lights off or whatever. But if that's their focus, then you could find the whole world full of paperclips.
Like, we all know as humans that if we were to type in the question, how do we make the world a better place? There's one very obvious solution. And that's the one we're pretty trying to avoid here.
That's exactly right. So we do have to be very careful. And you're seeing countries like Italy already come out
and then others like Ireland trying to find out what they should be aware of. But that's the problem, isn't it? The regulators don't know what they're looking for. So how do you manage this stuff without a disaster?
Exactly. And you've not only got the kind of privacy data issues, which is where Italy is coming from and the EU with their very, very strict guidelines on that kind of thing, but you've also got the ethical issues because it can't help but be bias. And the reason why I say that, and I've seen a distinct improvement from ChatGPT 3 to 4, where it is certainly much more nuanced and balanced now than it was. But when you train these platforms, you train them on a data set, huge data sets, right? But they still have to go through a feedback loop where they're understanding what it is that you're wanting. Now, that is a human feedback loop that they're going back through. Now just think who it is.
Who's I mean, it's back to the white males for the last 200 years.
Completely.
So there's instantly a bias.
Completely.
Yeah.
So as a woman, I do get concerned about that because if you look at who is creating the most powerful things that the planet has ever seen.
The boys that like their toys.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we got them. So the answer to my question at the beginning is, yes, we're done for. Excellent.
No, not all doom and gloom. So whilst I have concerns about the safety and I desperately want some safety measures put in there and I want them put in now, I am also optimistic because I am also excited about what AI is capable of doing.
Yeah.
If you're already looking at some of the developments in medical science, the protein folding, they've used artificial intelligence to work that out. That was incredible. And they gave that away And there's so many medical people around the world now.
It's ginormous.
Like, the medical applications for AI are absolutely incredible.
Yeah. Fantastic. Mm. That is all brilliant. But I do generally, just from my dabbling in the last couple of months, just generally see so many time-saving opportunities for us as business people running a small business where, as we've said a number of times, we're tight on time, we're tight on money.
Yep.
And suddenly we can get stuff done and done well.
Absolutely.
With a lot less grief.
Yeah. That's why we as an agency, and I personally am now dedicating myself almost entirely to AI and teaching small businesses how to adopt this technology and tools, because it is a game changer.
Yeah, and one that changes by the week, so you've got to keep on top of it.
Absolutely. That's why they need to keep coming back to the roadtoretail.com website, because we are going to be putting resources on there. We are going to be putting out top tips. So instead of having to chase all over the place, you can just come to the Road to Retail and we will keep you up to date with what's happening.
Okay, Kevin, so Malik and the race to the bottom. What do you think of that?
That's the comment whether the interview I had with how do you feel about Amazon. Amazon have got their pricing bots for some time now, and the pricing bots are eating their margin for no benefit to them. So the pricing bots are set up to say, what's the lowest price? And we play with them. So you say to somebody, choose a SKU, take it down, let's watch. And you watch over 30, 40 minutes where the price comes down. So what you do is say, we've got 25 of those that we don't want. So put the price down. And smaller businesses put the price down, leave them down there. And what they do is they wash out all of Amazon's stock below cost. Now, Amazon is selling something below cost. And their buyers and their merchants can't see that. The bot didn't say, hey, is it all right if I sell this below cost significantly? And the merchant goes, yeah. The bot's been given the delegated authority to sell it below cost. Order comes in, hips the pick line. We then add labor, packaging material, and freight, and ship it out. So you've taken a bad situation and made it worse. I think Amazon's got some significant problems in some of its major brands that it has on its marketplace that it carries. So this isn't an issue if there's someone on their marketplace. They don't care. They don't eat the margin. But I think they've got significant problems. I think their bots are out of control. I think they have real significant margin issues, and they're being played by human beings. And the human beings are saying, let's play them, because there's so many SKUs. Unless somebody's going in there line by line and saying, why do we keep doing this? Why do we keep getting a margin getting so low? And remember, this is a time when labor costs are going up, when packaging, when freight is going up. So you really do compound the problem. You significantly compound the problem. Here's the dichotomy. If you've built football stadium, three times football stadium size warehouses to put volume through, and big chunks of that volume, let's say 10 or 15% of that volume at times across their owned SKUs that are in those warehouses that they own are below cost. Well, you say you'll stop selling below cost. So the volume drips away. So you've got 90% capacity, 85% capacity in your warehouse. You're still paying for 100%. So there are some time in the woodshed coming for chunks of Amazon's business. They've got so clever in some places that it is easy for a human being to play the bot. Sounds a bit scary,
wow.
Doesn't it?
It does sound scary. It sounds fascinating, though, I have to say.
Yeah.
Ooh, so it does sound a little bit doom and gloom ahead, or is it just the time to get cleverer?
Nige, you know me. Tomorrow is the next best day ever. Tomorrow is the next best day ever. There's more downside of not embracing AI for your business than not doing it. If you don't do it, you will have a worse outcome. So don't worry about the huge issues that are taking place in different countries, some democracies, certainly not all over the planet, where they're looking to change policy to reflect that we're now in a situation where we have AI. It's no different to when we have cryptocurrency. It's no different to when we had gold mines and people digging holes in the ground, or where we had steam trains going through people's properties. The government will legislate for those things and do them. But right now you're running a business, you're feeding your family, you're sending your kids to school, you're going on holiday. Then what you need to do is you need to be able to do the things that you do the best you can and look around at the AI platforms that are going to help you. If you know you've got search engine problems because you're running an old system, change your search engine. If you know that your EDM, your emailing from your database is not so good, find one that's better. If you're just using Google AdWords, stop it. It's not getting you anywhere. You need to make sure that you're back to your socials. If your socials, how are you managing them? How are you spreading that content across the different socials? Can it be automated, or can you use AI? Don't curl up in a ball and say, oh, this is terrible, I'm not going to do it. Don't be in business then.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Kevin. I think a fantastic amount of useful information has come out of today's conversation. If, as a listener or viewer, you've enjoyed the content today or found it really useful, please subscribe and like on whichever platform you're watching on or listening on. If you are watching, just to be aware, sorry, the light was at the end of the day today, so it has changed a bit in look. Thank you, Kevin, and thank you, Miranda. Remember, go to theroadtoretail.com to find out all about our various courses where you can up your education on shopper experience and digital marketing.
Nige, I don't think you should apologise to our listeners and our viewers for the fact that the sun's setting behind you over the Pacific Ocean. We do these things whenever the time fits into our businesses. I mean, we have a number of businesses we're involved in and we have to make sure we're doing the right things by them. The Road to Retail is a passion of yours and mine and Miranda's now, which is great. So the fact that we do these things at different times of days, in different places, on different days, doesn't matter. The fact is that what you do is you get us together and say, hey, come on, let's share some more knowledge and make sure that people who run small businesses can benefit. So I love doing it, Nige. Let's keep doing it. It's a blast.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for listening and watching. Bye.